Hey everyone, it's Vicky. You may have noticed some changes we've been trying with Insight lately, and I wanted to fill you in. We are very excited about our new theme music. We're offering more Insight throughout the day on Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And this month, to give ourselves the chance to catch our breath a little bit, we're going to bring you a half-hour version of Insight. You can still expect the same thoughtful conversations and topics every Monday through Thursday, but now from 9 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. Let us know what you think. All right, here's today's show. Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. 121%. That's how much the number of fentanyl-related deaths increased in California alone between 2019 through 2021. Our content-sharing partners at CalMatters recently published an extensive report on fentanyl use in California, from the number of deaths to where it's coming from to the community's hardest hit and the state's effort to keep it out. What's evident is the days of just saying, don't do drugs, they are long gone. Now it's as simple and as frightening as one pill can kill. Fentanyl has long been used as a prescription to treat pain, but in recent years has become illegally manufactured on the black market and often unknowingly laced into counterfeit pills. Because fentanyl is up to 50 times stronger than heroin and 100 times stronger than morphine, all it takes is a pencil tip amount to become lethal. Ana Ibarra is a health policy reporter for CalMatters and joins us now to discuss some of the highlights of her findings. Good morning, Ana.
Good morning, Vicky.
So fentanyl is at the top of our mind. We've had these conversations multiple times on Insight, given that it's fueling an alarming spike in overdoses across the country. But I think it's important to take a look back because we have been here before. When did the opioid epidemic start in California?
Yeah, so it depends how long back we want to go, right? So if we look at prescription opioids, we're going back to the 90s. In the early 2000s, we started to see an increased use in prescription opioids that led to an increased use in heroin. And now we're at these fentanyl stage, if you will. If you look at public health data, the overdose related to fentanyl really started to take off around 2018. And like you said, in just 3 years, the California opioid deaths had more than doubled. By the end of 2021, we were looking at more than 7,000 overdose deaths, primarily from fentanyl.
And we'll get into those numbers a little bit. But can you talk a little bit more about how we moved from opiates like OxyContin in the 90s to now fentanyl?
Yeah, so a lot of it has to do with, you know, back in the 90s, there was an increase in the number of prescriptions being handed out to patients. And from reports, you can look back at CDC reports, there was a lot of reporting on opioids being prescribed a lot easier to treat pain. And that sort of led to people in needing and becoming addicted to these opiates as we started to see this public health crisis emerge, you know, providers started to pull back a bit. That sort of pushed some people who are already very addicted into using other drugs like heroin. That then led to an increased use in street drugs and fentanyl, you know, now being one of them.
I mean, the big headline that your reporting found was 121% increase in fentanyl related deaths from 2019 to 2022. And you mentioned that fentanyl related deaths and overdoses, they really started picking up around 2018. The big question really is why? What is different with fentanyl?
Yeah. So as you said, fentanyl is very, very potent. It's very addictive. Fentanyl is something that has been used for, like you said, many, many years to treat severe pain. But what we're talking about is illicit, cheaply manufactured fentanyl without any of the safeguards. And so, you know, what we do know is that because it is highly addictive, there's this, you know, greater demand. We know that it is also cheaper to produce than some other drugs. And as you also mentioned, we are now, one of the main concerns is that fentanyl is being laced into other drugs. So, you know, some people may not even know that they are ingesting fentanyl and, you know, could be They could be taking a tablet that they think might be something else, but that is laced with a lethal amount of fentanyl.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the campaigns, one pill can kill. I mean, and that's a pretty powerful statement. But when you actually had a photo from the DEA showing the amount that could be lethal, it was literally the tip of a pencil, the lead part of a pencil tip. I mean, that was just so striking to know just that small amount could be deadly for someone.
Yes, absolutely. I think to me, to me, that was also one of the most striking things. And we often hear about how powerful fentanyl, but you're right. Once you sort of see that illustration, it's really striking. And the CDC has this estimated average that 2 milligrams can kill. So that's, just a very, very small amount.
Given that your focus is health policy as a reporter, I mean, you know the impact that fentanyl has had on communities in recent years. You've had these conversations and have done reporting on this. But how did this deep dive that you just did with your colleagues, how did it deepen your understanding about this crisis? And how does it shape how you communicate it to the public?
That's such a great question. I think for me, it was really seeing who this was impacting, how this was being sort of communicated as, I think for many, many years, this has been communicated as a public safety, criminal justice issue. But really now starting to see this push and awareness of that this is indeed a public health crisis as well. I think we've seen it even in, the legislature's response and the state's response in really trying to find or increase, if you will, access to the tools that we, to the public health tools that we know can help, that we do have available now. So, that's things like distributing more naloxone, increasing the use of fentanyl test strips. And so just really, I guess, like you say, really talking about this as a public health issue that it is.
Because these overdoses, I mean, it's not just a problem for one part of the state or one part of the community. It goes from urban areas to suburban communities. It spans socioeconomic levels and statuses into rural areas as well. And one of your numbers that you found that was quite astonishing was that in 2021, more people died from fentanyl-related overdoses in California than car accidents. I mean, what was your reaction when you learned that? Was that striking for you when you took that in for the first time?
Absolutely. Car accidents are still on the CDC's and CDPH's list of kind of top reasons for deaths. We know, usually the list is topped with cancer and heart disease, but toward the bottom of that list, you still car accidents usually are still on that list. So now seeing, overdose kind of, creep its way up there, it was very striking to me. And I think that context really kind of took this reporting home for me as well.
The period also that you look at, I mean, it happened during the pandemic. And I've had this conversation with the Placer County District Attorney when it comes to fentanyl. I mean, there is obviously a mental health component to the sacrifices that people made during the pandemic. It was a huge lifestyle change. Did you get a better understanding of what role the pandemic played in this spike in fentanyl-related overdoses?
Yeah, I mean, definitely that was one thing that stood out to me. During the pandemic, all of my reporting was so focused on, the impacts of COVID. And I think, this is just an example of one thing that might have sort of slipped through the cracks in terms that we weren't, paying as close attention to. And so, yes, the fact that, the numbers doubled during the pandemic was definitely very telling. I will add, Vicky, if CDPH just recently released some preliminary data for 2022, and when you look at fentanyl deaths, they are still creeping up. But one bit that I thought was pretty promising was that the number of fentanyl-related deaths among teens dropped from 230 in 2021, 251 in 2022. So that's really new data. And I took it as perhaps a sign that, teenagers might be getting the message, and hopefully, we continue to see that number trend downward.
Yeah, it's certainly a number that's going in the right direction. Finally, Anna, for people that are confronted with fentanyl and at the worst case scenario, an overdose of a loved one, this doesn't come with a handbook. You don't necessarily have all this knowledge about fentanyl. What resources are available for people to learn more about fentanyl addiction or poisoning? Because sometimes people aren't even aware that it's in a counterfeit pill they're taking. What resources and information are available that you think people should turn to?
Yeah, so for a lot of this reporting, I did turn to national CDC data. Our state public health department has some pretty great resources too. I think what's useful looking for resources at the state level and the county level. Also, some counties, I think, do a better job than others and really sharing those resources easily online. But doing it more locally, you can also find, resources closer to home, anything from substance use treatments and places where you can find naloxone either for free or, relatively cheaper. You can also try some local resources will also point you to places where you can find tools, like we talked about, fentanyl test strips. So, yeah, lots of data information out there. I kind of wish it was in one great place where you can just find anything and everything if you just typed into your zip code or something like that. But you can find a lot of information at your county public health department website and the state one as well.
And you also linked to some as well, or mentioned some in your reporting, which we have linked on our Insight page too. Anna, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Anna Ibarra is a health reporter for Cal Matters, a content sharing partner of CAP Radio. Up next, pack your eardrums. We are rounding the corner to another edition of Insight's Concert Connect, highlighting the best live music coming up across Northern California. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. From space-age pop to indie country, a Cambodian rock band, and a lone multi-instrumentalist that is easier to put into a bucket of fried chicken instead of a music genre, this edition of Concert Connect is a smorgasbord of great live music, coming to venues soon across Northern California. CAP Radio host Nick Bruner, Andrew Garcia, they are those familiar voices who round up the best upcoming concerts within a reasonable drive. Hey, you two.
Hi there.
So rare is the moment where you can use the word smorgasbord in casual conversations. You hear what she just did?
I was so excited. I smiled when I typed it.
Hi, Vicky.
Hello. Okay, so I'm starting off with you, Andrew. We're going in chronological order. And I love expanding my vocabulary with you when I do research on these artists. So I learned a new word, shoegaze, and that is when describing Sacramento artist Plum Anderson, which is kind of, as I learned, a dream pop, psychedelic music style. But the artist has been around since 2015. When did you first come across him?
I've been listening to a lot of local music and just trying to find some artists for concerts and maybe for Hey Listen and things like that. So I came across Plum Anderson, and shoegaze is one of the many genres, I think you can say, Plum Anderson embodies. You can add in, you add that with some pop music, maybe some of the weirdest parts of like Prince's catalog and David Bowie's catalog, and make it really funky and spacey and kind of lo-fi. And I think that gets you to the scratching scratching the surface of Plum Anderson. It's pop music, but it's like experimenting. It's trying to push the boundaries of pop music. And I'm really excited about this show because sometimes Plum Anderson will occasionally play as like a solo act or other configurations. But recently they've been playing with like an entire five-piece backing band, rhythm sections, flute, saxophone, keyboards. A lot of great stuff. And because there's so many genres, I have a feeling the crowd is going to be like dancing, grooving along 1 minute, maybe a little mosh the next minute. It should be really fun.
And they're going to be playing at Bottom of the Hill in San Francisco on Sunday, August 20th. I went to their website and they described themselves saying that they were chosen by Rolling Stone as the best place to hear live music in San Francisco. I'm curious if either of you have been to Bottom of the Hill.
I have not. Indeed. A couple different times. It's a fun little spot, grungy, a great place to have a beer and watch some great music. And if you can't make this drive, Plum Anderson also plays in Sacramento a whole bunch.
Great. Well, let's listen to How Do You Do It by Plum Anderson. I get an 80s vibe.
Super 80s, yeah. Bringing the 80s to the now in the best way.
All right, so your next pick is indie country singer-songwriter Jess Williamson, Texas-born, but based in Los Angeles. And she described her sound and new album as Linda Ronstadt turned minimalist and the chicks gone indie. Mm-hmm. What stands out to you about Jess Williamson?
I think that's a great description. What caught me is, because I often think of folk and country as sort of like the genres of nostalgia, you know, thinking back to the good old days and the past and things like that. And Jess Williamson's music has that nostalgic air to it, but it feels very new and of the now. It's like I'm nostalgic for yesterday. It feels very fun and new. There's so much going on. You'll have like an acoustic guitar singer-songwriter vibe, but that is over top of like an electronic program drum machine beat. And then in the second verse, like a little banjo will start creeping in. But then wait, what's that? It's a saxophone. There's a bunch of different things going on, and it feels of the traditions of the past of folk and country, but of the now. Mm.
All right, so Jess Williamson's going to be playing at the Starlit Room at Harlow's in Sacramento, and that's Tuesday, August 29th. So we're going to take a listen to her track, Time Ain't Accidental.
Leaving tomorrow, I don't have to, I just should. Once in a while, it's nice to be good. Odessa in an hour, call home by midday, but I'm soaked in your power. Turn around and stay. Meet me in Mexico. No one knows us there. Pretend it's our honeymoon. Put flowers in our hair. The way that I'm loving you is like it's gonna last. Picked you like a petal from a wild rose past.
I know it's about heartbreak, but it's quite romantic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Nick, you're next. Dengue Fever.
Yes.
That they've been around the block, actually. They've been around for 20 years. They were celebrating mm-hmm. their 20th anniversary of their debut album. Mm-hmm. When did you discover this Cambodian rock pop band?
I think it was shortly after I started working at Cap Radio around 2007. Started doing programs around 2008. Dengue Fever's been around earlier than that by about 4 or 5 years. And I think we got the soundtrack to Sleepwalking Through the Mekong came in, which features them heavily, and the sound of Cambodia's psych rock. And you have a genuine Cambodian pop star fronting this band out of Los Angeles. That's a well-trod, you know, bit of information there. But it can't be understated that Chaum Nimal's vocals are singular and expressive and wonderful. And that over top of a healthy dose of psychedelia and space rock that just kind of gradually snakes its way across your eardrums. It's a fantastic, fantastic sound. And I can't wait until they get up on stage at Harlow's on September 15th.
Yeah, and I would imagine they have garnered quite the following. Would this sell out, I would imagine it's going to be a pretty good crowd.
I think it'll be a pretty terrific draw. I mean, for people who, like, I think this next tune will help inspire some of those in attendance to get out there and buy a ticket. But yeah, I'm certainly excited about it.
All right, let's listen to their self-titled track. They sound great. And they're playing Wednesday, September 20th at Harlow's, right?
Yes, correct. So Wednesday, the 20th of September, that's 5 days after their newest album comes out. The new album is called Ting Mong. And the track we just heard, Silverfish, is one of two tracks that you can hear right now from that record.
Awesome. Well, tying a bow on today's segment is Buckethead.
Yeah.
And he wears a mask adorned with a KFC bucket hat. He's quite acclaimed guitarist. I mean, he's played with a lot of big names and even with a stint with Guns N' Roses, right?
Yeah, he was the guitarist for Guns N' Roses, I want to say in the early 2000s. And yeah, Brian Carroll is his name. But the Buckethead persona on stage, he can turn on a dime between spacey jams and guitar shredding. This guy has insane fingerwork. 16 albums out under the name Buckethead since 1992. Innumerable appearances with other musicians, as you mentioned. He even worked with George Clinton on the soundtrack to Mortal Kombat from 1995. That film, which I just found out about for the first time while looking this up. His latest release is 28 minutes long. It's a single that came out in March called Dancing Soul. Eclectic begins to describe the Buckethead sound.
And so he's going to be playing at Ace of Spades on Wednesday, September 27th. Who is a Buckethead listener?
A Buckethead listener. Well, the man I spend most of my days sitting next to here at Cap Radio, Antonio Muniz, is absolutely a Buckethead listener. But I think anybody who really likes sort of like metal, squeedly-deedly guitar work is really going to get a kick out of Buckethead, but also people who may like the sort of like sort of almost new age music. It's impossible for me to express in the time that we have his ability to transfix a listener through both of those sounds in one piece of music.
And I would happily follow Antonio. He has wonderful musical taste. Okay, so let's listen to this track, Sea of Expanding Shapes. As always, thanks, Nick and Andrew.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vicky.
Cap Radio host Nick Bruner and Andrew Garcia joining us for another edition of Insights Concert Connect. As always, you can listen to more modern music and catch Hey Listen on Cap Radio Saturdays from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. and again from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, shoot us an email, insight@capradio.org. Thank you to managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer is Megan Minata. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineer is Chris Feltz. Our show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here on Monday.
Hi.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.